Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from The James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Do you feel like you matter? It's a core human need, as essential as food and water. Mattering is not conditional. And author Jennifer Wallace says we are in a mattering crisis. She talked to teachers, parents, caregivers, first responders, and more. She was searching for how to live a life of deep connection and purpose. And what she found is that in today's world, there has been a significant erosion of mattering. Wallace's new book explores how our lives are transformed when we are reminded of our value. Jennifer Wallace is an award-winning journalist and author, and her new book is titled Mattering, The Secret to a Life of Deep Connection and Purpose. And she joins us today. Jennifer, welcome to All Sides.
Oh, thanks for having me, Amy.
So I found your book very powerful and helpful. I wanted to start with how you define mattering, because I think we all know what it means, but it's also hard to explain. Can you explain it?
Yeah, so I take my definition from the researchers who have been studying it since the 1980s, and it's simply defined as feeling valued for who we are deep inside and having a chance to add value back to our family, friends, community, and wider world.
The line that really struck me in the book was that it's mattering, powerful when we feel it, destructive when we don't. Can you talk about that destructive part? I mean, what happens when a person feels like they don't matter?
Yeah, so when we feel like we don't matter, we can turn against ourselves. We can become anxious, depressed, turn to substances to try to alleviate that psychological pain, or we can lash out in anger. I think about road rage, online attacks, school shootings, workplace shootings, as desperate attempts to say, I'll show you I matter. In fact, there's a study that I quote in the book of suicidal men, and the two words they used to describe their suffering the most was useless and worthless, which are the words of feeling like you don't matter.
You call mattering a meta need. You say it's deeper than belonging, and it comes after food and shelter. After food and shelter comes mattering. So tell me first about how mattering is more important than belonging.
Yeah, so researchers define it as a meta need, or an umbrella term, meaning that it's a need that sits above other needs like belonging, connection, mastery, self-determination, purpose, meaning. So, but it goes deeper, as you mentioned. So you can belong to a class or the accounting department or your neighborhood or even a family and not feel like you matter to the people there. So you can belong at the table. You can feel welcomed at the table. But mattering tells you that you are making a positive impact on the people around that table.
Because I can feel like, you know, if you join a club of like-minded people, you can feel a sense of belonging and friendship. I mean, but are you saying that that sense of belonging, you could also still feel like you don't matter?
Well, I think as social beings, we crave the social proof that we matter. So what mattering offers us is this, feeling valued, but also seeing the positive impact that we make on others. So mattering kind of raises the bar a bit, if you will. It's feeling like you belong and feeling like if you weren't there, the group would be less good, that you would be missed, that you are making such an impact that you would be missed if you weren't there.
And talk about how you tell people, you know, because I can hear a lot of people saying, well, yes, of course, that person belongs to my group, so they matter. But you can be there and be belonging, and other people around you can feel like they matter, but you don't know that yourself. Is that a part of the problem?
Yes, it's a felt experience. Mm-hmm. So you can't actually make someone feel like they matter, but you can create the conditions. You can create a kind of feedback loop that can help them connect with their impact. So yes, you can't make someone feel like they matter to the group. You also can't make somebody feel like they belong to a group. But there are actions that you can take to feed that sense of mattering and bring it up to the surface.
Tell me about an action you can take to feed mattering then.
Great.
Yeah.
So here's a simple thing. You could send a text to somebody, let's say in your group, in your book group, book club group, and say, you know, if it weren't for you, dot, 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 our conversations would not be as rich. You always bring so much wisdom and insight. And boy, you add so much to our group.
Oh, that sounds nice. See, I would love to get a text that says that. Oh, my. Okay. So but immediately people think of like celebrating someone as a way to make them feel like they matter. You know, like you can throw them a birthday party or throw them a retirement party. And those are ways to show that someone matters to you. But you also talk in the book about how those are superficial things. So can you talk about the deeper mattering, you know, deeper than the retirement party?
So it was so interesting that when I asked people to name a moment when they felt like they mattered, it was never the retirement party. It was never the toast at a birthday party. It was the small moments. So we as social creatures, we crave to matter. We long to matter in the mundane of everyday life. The proof that we are essential pieces to this puzzle of life. So what were some of the examples they gave me of feeling like they mattered? It was when they were sick and a neighbor came over with a pot of soup. It was a colleague checking in after a particularly rough day at work. It was, you know, their researchers have been studying mattering and they have found critical ingredients that make you feel like you matter and the ingredients you can use to make others feel like they matter. And I've put it under a framework I call the SAID framework, S-A-I-D, which stands for significance, appreciation, feeling invested in, and dependent on. So those four elements really get to the deepening of a sense of mattering.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about feeling valued through the lens of Jennifer Wallace's new book, Mattering, The Secret to a Life of Deep Connection and Purpose. Throughout your book, you take your readers through what you call the mattering core. This includes recognition, reliance, importance, ego extension, and attunement. So we'll probably touch on a few of those throughout our conversation today, but I wanted to talk about the way you define recognition, you know, because it's more than just getting a fancy watch for working at a company for 25 years, right?
Exactly.
You define recognition as you and your actions are valued, your absence would be felt. And that was a powerful sentence for me. So can you talk a little bit more about like, you are valued, your absence would be felt. How do you tell someone that?
By appreciating the doer behind a deed. So that's how I really, I come to think of it. So let's say you have a colleague who is always so great at planning happy hours and team lunches. Instead of saying to them, you know, thanks for another fun event, a way to foster that sense of recognition and mattering is to say, you know, you are really a community builder here. We are so much stronger and more cohesive as a group because of all of your efforts to get us together. We're so lucky to have you. So again, it is going beyond the deed, beyond thanking somebody for what they do, to thanking them for who they are.
In this section of the book about recognition, you tell a story about firefighters. And it was amazing to me to read this and think that a firefighter could possibly feel like they do not matter because they literally save lives, right? So can you tell us more about Greg, the firefighter that you profiled?
Yes. So I was looking for jobs that you had to know you mattered. And I thought, firefighters, they literally risk their lives. They go into burning buildings to save us. And what I was struck by in my research was at the high rates of burnout, disengagement, even cynicism among the ranks, among firefighters today. And so I spent time in a fire station, North Charleston, South Carolina, with a fire chief named Greg, who was creating a system to change that disengagement. So what I didn't know was that firefighters are often the first to arrive at the scene of a car accident or a medical emergency. They stabilize the person, then EMS takes over, rushes them to the hospital, and firefighters never know what happened next, if their actions had made any difference at all. And so that lack of being connected to your impact was causing them to disengage and burn out and even feel cynical about their work. So Greg created a system to change that. He tracked the outcomes of rescues so that his firefighters would know when their actions had saved a life or eased someone's suffering. And the reason the story was so powerful to me was because I thought how often all of us are so disconnected with our impact. We offer a friend a piece of advice and we never know, did it make a difference? Right? All of these things, we crave to know that our actions matter. And so we can, and so what I have learned through Greg is that we can all close the loop. We can all follow up. That advice that you gave me last week, I took it and hear what happened. You know how you set me up with a colleague? Well, we went for coffee and here's what we're working on because of you. All of these small actions matter.
Yeah, the Greg story is interesting because he pops up a few different times in the book. But what I learned is that you would think that the firefighter would be able to just easily figure out, you know, like call the hospital and say, oh, did that girl make it? But because of privacy laws, they can't just tell you, right? And so Greg, it was more that, you know, when Greg found out that they needed to know this answer, I mean, he had to create a whole new system so that they could find out what happened, like, right? Can you
Exactly.
describe that a little
Yeah.
bit? Yeah.
In a way, so the medical officer is there to train for CPR and other emergency responses, train the firefighters. And so Greg said when a firefighter wants to know what happened to a patient, I'd like you to track it down and I'd like you to, without even, giving up any of the information about the person, maintaining their sense of privacy, to let the firefighter know the person survived. They're going home, they're walking again because of what you did, because you crawled into that wreck and helped them come out. This was also closing the loop. Greg was telling me that firefighters will go in and it go into homes to fight them, and then they'll look the next week and the insurance company will have knocked it down. And that it really erodes morale. These firefighters are risking their lives to save a structure, and then they see that it made zero difference. And so he also had the fire investigator close the loop for the men and women on his team, so that when they did fight a fire, and the insurance company said, "Well, we're not going to pay to restore this," at least they would know what actions they took that worked, so that they could work again. So they were feeling appreciated, but it went beyond just, we appreciate you. It was, you went in there when the temperatures were X, you executed here and here, you did this, that worked, and connected them to their impact. Let them see and hear that their actions made a difference.
Do you know if Greg's methods are at other fire departments, or is it just North Charleston that has mattered people?
So it's
Yeah.
interesting. Greg and I just did a webinar yesterday for a national first responder nonprofit, and people were amazed by it. So I've come to think that no, this is not something that we do. And it's not that fire chiefs or the head of EMS or anyone in these first responder roles, it's not that they don't want to give the feedback. It's that they have so much input and so much output demanded of them that they sometimes don't even think about closing the loop like this. But boy, did it make a huge difference in morale.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about how to feel valued and focus on the value we have to offer with Jennifer Wallace, author of the new book, Mattering. And coming up, we're going to talk about how our overachievement culture impacts our feelings about mattering. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Feeling like you matter is a core human need, as essential as food and water. But author Jennifer Wallace found our culture is in a mattering crisis. From burned out employees to overwhelmed caregivers, people are struggling and need to be reminded that they are valued. The right way to convey that value depends on the person and the situation. We are talking this hour about how to live a meaningful life at every stage of life. And with us is author and journalist Jennifer Wallace. Her new book is Mattering, The Secret to a Life of Deep Connection and Purpose. Thanks again for being here, Jennifer.
Thanks, Amy.
So you are also the author of another book, which is called Never Enough, When Achievement Culture Becomes Toxic and What We Can Do About It. So you talk in Mattering about how these two books are tied together. So tell us what our achievement culture has done to our feeling of mattering.
So achievement culture, in my mind, or when it becomes toxic, is when our sense of self, our sense of who we are, is so wrapped up in our achievements that we only feel like we are valued, like we matter, when we are achieving, when we have a certain weight on the scale, when we have the big house or whatever it is. I think about the theologian Henry Nouwen, who talks about the three great lies of our society. I am what I have. I am what I do. I am what people say and think about me. And I think we have, for a variety of reasons, really internalized those messages. And that is in part what is eroding this sense of mattering, of feeling valued for who you are deep at your core.
So this leads me to the chapter in the book that's called Mattering Too Much, when the weight of being needed leaves us feeling depleted. So you say that if you feel this way, then it's not true mattering. It's kind of a distorted mattering. So tell me what it means to matter too much.
What it means to matter too much is when you are so critical to everyone else's needs, but your needs are never prioritized. So you might be a mother of young children. You might be taking care of an elderly parent or an elderly spouse. You might be a first responder who is really holding this, you know, community together. But if you are never felt like your needs are prioritized, that is what will lead to burnout. So true mattering is, it's almost like a protective shield against burnout and disengagement. But mattering requires balance, you know, balancing our own needs with the needs of others.
So the examples you give in the book are caregivers, teachers, but you also talk about the passion tax. So it's kind of like you pick to be a teacher. This is what you wanted. So you wanted to matter like this. So where's the balance? You know, so use that as an example, the teacher, like you pick to be a teacher. So if you have 28 kindergartners who need you, then that's, you pick that.
Exactly. So what I found in my research, and there was a great study that was conducted at the Mayo Clinic that I cite in the chapter about how to balance this, being needed too much with our own needs. So there was a study done at the Mayo Clinic of busy physicians who were also mothers, who were reporting low levels of well-being and high levels of stress. The researchers conducted a 12-week intervention where they had the women meet once a week for an hour in small groups of five or six to support each other, to be seen and heard like they try to do with their patients and with their kids. After 12 weeks, the women reported greater levels of well-being. Their stress hormone, cortisol, had dropped. They even reported feeling like better parents. And this is because what this hour together with other people who were going through something stressful allowed them was to feel prioritized. That time was protected. They were a priority for that time. So I've come to believe that the way out of feeling like you matter too much Well, first, of course, we need more structures in place for teachers, for caregivers. But separate from that, what we can do, how we can take action today on our own is twofold. One is to create those supportive networks. Our resilience rests on our relationships. So we have often been sold this idea by the multi-billion dollar wellness industry that, light a candle, soak in a bubble bath, and you'll be resilient. Those are great stress reducers, but they do not give us the resilience that we need to show up day in and day out for the people who are relying on us. The only thing that does that are deep, nourishing relationships that deliver on a sense of mattering. So that's number one. And then the other thing is, and it's a practice that I've started doing, I was very bad at this idea of mattering to myself. Excuse me, which is paramount. It is important. We need to feel valued by ourselves and we need to add value to ourselves. And so, a small practice that I would love to offer anybody listening is every morning when you are brushing your teeth, to think about what is one small need that I have today that I can meet so that I can show up as my best self for the people who are relying on me and for myself. It might be an hour, on a walk with a best friend. It might be a half hour with a delicious cup of coffee, listening to NPR uninterrupted. So, what is that small need that you need to fill for yourself so that you can be your best self? You deserve it for yourself and you deserve it for the people who are depending on you.
What do you tell people who say that they can't possibly find that hour? Do you say start smaller then?
Yeah, I would say start smaller than find one or two people in your life, reach out to them, say, I listened to this woman on NPR and she was giving us homework. And she said, I need to find one or two people that I can check in with. One, we can all find 1 hour a week. We just can. We can all find it. Find that 1 hour a week. And frankly, once you find it, you're going to find I need more than just 1 hour a week. And that's okay.
Yeah, the example you give in the book with the teacher is that that teacher found a couple of other teachers to have lunch with, and the rule was you had to show up at the lunch, right? Yeah, so no more working lunches. You had to show up at the lunch and no work talk, so you couldn't talk about teaching. You had to talk about anything else,
Yeah.
and yeah. So and I found that because a teacher lunch is probably 20 minutes, but that but if they did it and it was helpful, tell us how that helped the teacher.
It helped the teacher so much. It reminded her that she was valued as more than just a teacher, that she was valued by others for the full person that she was, and that she didn't always have to downgrade her needs for the needs of everybody around her. These teachers reminded her that she mattered too.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about feeling valued through the lens of Jennifer Wallace's new book, Mattering. Listeners, please join us. What makes you feel like you matter? Tell us a story of how you live a meaningful life. Tell us a story of where you feel like you matter. 614-292-8513, or send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. 614-292-8513, or email allsides@wosu.org. An example that you give to show someone that they matter in our busy world is inconvenience. And this really struck me, but the example, listeners, bear with me. The example is good. So you talk about picking someone up at the airport. Like, yes, they can get an Uber. Yes, they can. But this person wants to talk to you. They want to reconnect. They want to tell you about their trip for that 20-minute drive. So the inconvenience is a part of the gift. It's saying you're important to me. You're important enough for me to lose 30 minutes from my day to drive to the airport. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, so I argue in that chapter that we talk so much about how our village has disbanded, but I argue that maybe even worse, the village exists, but it's behind a paywall, and that paywall is Uber, it's TaskRabbit, it's the grocery store delivering your groceries. We have outsourced caring to the economy. And in that way, we have outsourced, we have eroded the social proof that we matter to each other. And so that example of taking someone to the airport was someone in Idaho who lives not so far from the airport. And really, it's a 15-minute ride. And she said she reminds herself now, after learning about mattering and thinking about it, then when someone asks, she does it. And it is, as you put it, the inconvenience is part of the gift. When you can send an Uber, when you can send food via a delivery service, actually showing up with the pot of soup makes such a bigger impact today.
You also mentioned several times in the book that you need to prioritize yourself because no one else will. And that's an interesting thing to say to someone, but I mean, it makes complete sense. But tell me more about, prioritize yourself because no one else will. Because we're talking all about mattering, and you want to tell other people that they matter, but then you also have to matter to yourself.
You do. And this is a sort of a countercultural message, especially for women who are told, our needs should be last on the list. This is in this section of the book, I talk about my mother-in-law, who passed away a couple of years ago, but she lived in a really sweet townhouse that had really tiny closets. And what she would do was she would decorate her closets, especially the ones in her bedroom that no one would see except her. She would wallpaper them, she'd put up pretty brass hooks, and she would treat them as kind of shrines of self-respect. And I thought to myself, what are the small ways that I can, bring spark some joy in my everyday life? What are some other ways? So it could be, I get these beautiful little cups wherever we travel. And so I've started using them for makeup brushes so that every time I go and I get, go to get my makeup, I look at this little, silver plate cup that I picked up in England. And it reminds me that's it, that I can delight myself. It is my job to carve out small moments of joy for me, because if I don't do that, I can't rely on other people to make me feel joy.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about feeling valued through the lens of Jennifer Wallace's new book, Mattering. Listeners, please join us. What makes you feel like you matter? Or if you need some advice on mattering, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. In the book, you have a phrase that I had never heard before. Everyone needs a corner man. Everyone needs to be a corner man. Tell us about what a corner man is, because I hadn't heard that word.
I hadn't either. I'm not a big boxing fan, but this is a term that comes from the boxing world. The corner man is in the corner. He of a boxing ring. He is there to encourage the boxer through setbacks. He's there to point out blind spots. He's there to deliver the tough love that a boxer needs in the middle of a fight. And the boxer is so invested in that fight that it becomes sort of his success or his loss, depending on how the boxer acts. In the research on mattering, researchers call this ego extension, the idea that you can extend your ego to include the egos of others. So to include others, it's you're extending your own feelings of success and well-being. I say to my kids all the time that 70% of my joy on any given day is because I delight in my friends' successes. I delight in their well-being. And boy, do I invest in them, and then I get to relish in it.
Can you give us an example that you use in a book to describe a corner man, maybe without boxing?
So a corner man is somebody at it could be, I mean, I've had wonderful corner men in my own life. So when I was early in my career, I worked at 60 Minutes, and I left when I had my kids because I couldn't do the travel, and so I was going back to print. And or I was going to work in print, and I was feeling discouraged. I was like, who would want to hire an out-of-work TV producer to write articles? And my girlfriends, who very much were corner men my entire career, sat me down at dinner, our monthly dinners that we had, and said, okay, if you're serious, next month I want you to come up with six articles, six pitches, then I did. And then the next month they said, okay, now let's send these out. We'll think of who to brainstorm them with. And they were with me every step of the way. They were checking in on me every week. They were there to celebrate when my first article in the Wall Street Journal was published. I very much credit really any professional success or really any success that I've had in my life to the people who are in my corner. We do not do this. So we don't go through this world alone. And I'll tell you, there's a wonderful gentleman that I interview in that chapter named Rehan, who gave this quote that I just totally agree with. He said, this is him talking, that I feel no pride in being a self-made man, that I feel pride in having people who are so deeply invested in me and my well-being. And he has this extraordinary network of support because he has built it.
Listeners, you can join us and tell us a story of feeling like you matter, or tell us a story of how you live a meaningful life. 614-292-8513. And we have Doug with us, Doug from Berwick. What's your story, Doug?
Hey, Amy. During pandemic, I actually started sending out cards. And the letters became popular. Even after pandemic, work friends, neighbors, just friends, they get cards at Valentine's Day and, all the different holidays, and decorate them up as if I'm a third grade girl with all kinds of stickers and things. And I'm told that those are really appreciated, and it makes me feel good to do it.
Oh, thank you, Doug. Thank you for telling us about that. Yeah, Jennifer, the idea of sending something that's handwritten that you had to like write on the envelope and put a stamp on is so much more meaningful than just an email, I would say, or just a Facebook post.
Yeah, it's the effort behind it, right? It's the effort to get the stationery. And we can start, and there's wonderful research in gratitude about noticing the effort behind a task. When somebody gives you a card, it's not just appreciating that they gave you the card, it's appreciating that they went to the effort to go to the store, that they wrote it out for you, that they remembered you. These are these small moments that we can relish, that people think we matter enough to make that effort.
And then you also have to, I feel like, when you receive the card, you have to tell the person you got it,
close the loop.
You talk about that in your book, Closing the Loop, because if they just do it but they don't hear anything back, they might stop doing it, right?
Yes, or they might wonder, did it make it to you? Mm-hmm. Did this effort make any difference at all? Mm-hmm.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about feeling valued with Jennifer Wallace. Her new book is Mattering, The Secret to a Life of Deep Connection and Purpose. Listeners, you can join us. What makes you feel like you matter? Tell us your story of living a meaningful life. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, we're going to talk about feeling like we matter through life's transitions. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Feeling like you matter. Powerful when you feel it, destructive when you don't. We're talking about the importance of feeling valued and appreciated with author and journalist Jennifer Wallace. Her new book is Mattering, The Secret to a Life of Deep Connection and Purpose. In the book, Jennifer says mattering is like gravity, unseen but essential. And she teaches us that mattering is something we can support in ourselves and in others through intentional actions. Jennifer, thanks again for being here on All Sides today.
Oh, so happy to be.
Listeners, you can join us. Tell us what makes you feel like you matter. Tell a story of living a meaningful life. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have Susan on the line. Susan from Columbus. You can tell us your story.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I'm a clinical counselor, And I'm 71. I'm still working. Doing the job that I do gives me so much meaning. People don't listen to other people anymore. And that's one of the things I can provide for my clients. The other thing I wanted to say was, you were talking earlier about self-care. And I talk to my clients about that all the time. And they say, I don't have time for that. I can't do that. I have to help somebody else. I always tell them that self-care isn't selfish. Taking care of yourself isn't selfish. It's good self-care. And we have to do that so that we can help other people.
Mm. Thank you, Susan. Thank you for that call. And an email kind of says the same thing, Jennifer. We have an email from Dylan who says, AA was good community for his recovery. Taking an hour for myself was not selfish, but a chance to recognize my needs are important. So what Susan just said and what Dylan just said, when did we get to a place in life where no one feels like they have an hour to themselves?
Yeah. I mean, this has been and it's just getting worse. One thing that I wanted to comment on both of them is this idea that self-care is actually other care. Mm. We have internalized this idea that to be a good friend, to be a good parent is to sacrifice. But what we forget is that we need to keep up our resilience for us to be those sturdy sources of support that we want to be for the people who are relying on us. Where did life get so busy? It is so busy. There is so much input coming at us all day long and so much output being demanded of us. If there's any hope with AI, my hope is that it will help us relieve some of this mental burden that we have day in and day out and allow us to create more bandwidth for doing important human work like connecting.
And we have another call. June in Columbus, do you want to tell us your story?
Yeah, I'm an aide for kids on the spectrum locally, and I do play-based therapy. The other week, I work with clients that are ages 2 to 6. My client said his first word, which is really exciting.
So yeah, so basically you feel valued working with these kids. You feel
I do, yeah.
Thank you for
and even though they might not outright say it, it's nice to make a difference in their lives. Mm.
Thank you, June. Thank you. So yeah, it's very easy in a job like that to feel like you matter and you're valued. I mean, you helped a kid say their first word. That's amazing. But then also, I hope that June takes time for herself too. There's such a balance there, Jennifer. Right.
Right. We want to continue to do the care for as long as we can. And in order for us to do that, we need to be feeding our own sense of mattering too.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine that, like, you know, if the caseload increases, too many kids, then it could, you could easily get into the mattering too much area too.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I wanted to move to the section of your book where you talk about life's changes, transitions, moving, empty nest. The challenge is not to cling to what once was, but to ask, where and how can I matter next? So tell me about finding mattering through transitions. You give a lot of examples in the book. Is there one that you'd like to pick to highlight here?
Well, I could talk about my own transition. When my husband and I were newlyweds, we moved from New York City to London. I had been working for 60 Minutes. I had family around. I had friendships of 2 or 3 decades that I was leaving behind. And I was excited about this transition. This was a transition we chose. Fast forward to landing in London, within a few days, my whole sense of mattering had collapsed. Mm-hmm. I didn't know about mattering back then, but I no longer felt valued. I felt, frankly, invisible in this new city. I didn't know where I was adding value. I was no longer working. I was freelancing. What I wish I had known then mm-hmm. is that transitions are hard by their mm-hmm. very nature. It is not that we are uniquely unable to cope, which we tend to do that when we're going through something really hard, grief, divorce, relocation, losing a job, retiring, facing an empty nest. We often tend to personalize these painful experiences instead of zooming out and putting these experiences into a wider context. And this is where I find the mattering lens is so helpful. So what the mattering lens can do is it could say to you, where is my sense of mattering? Where has it taken a hit? Do I no longer feel valued? Am I no longer given a chance to add value? Once you can identify it, then you can move forward. And there's wonderful research in the book and advice that I've gotten from people who have gone through painful life transitions and come out on the other side. And one of them is to find role models. Mm-hmm. Find somebody who has gone through something similar, take them to lunch, reach out to them. If you don't know somebody, listen to a podcast, read a book about it, and use that other person's experience as a kind of blueprint for helping you see your way through this transition. And then harness the power of invitation. What does that mean? It means accepting invitations. It means letting people, you know, we tend to want to wait until our messy lives are in order before we invite somebody in. What I have found and what I quote in the book is this research on the beautiful mess effect, which is this idea that we often underestimate how our vulnerability, how our, you know, revealing a bit of our messy lives actually brings people closer to us. It makes us more authentic. And so you don't have to be perfect to be loved. Invite people into your messy lives and ask them to help you through it. And then let's say you don't have people issuing you invitations, then you can start offering invitations yourself. I interviewed a woman who was going through a painful divorce and complaining to her therapist that she was the fifth wheel. She was no longer invited out. Her social life had gone to zero. And the therapist said, well, you have agency here. You can invite people into your kitchen for a meal. You can start building back your social life through issuing your own invitations.
Mm. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about feeling valued through the lens of Jennifer Wallace's new book, Mattering. Listeners, there's still time for you to join us. What makes you feel like you matter? Tell us a story about living a meaningful life. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You cite another author in your book, Bruce, is it Feiler? Feeler?
Yes.
Bruce
exactly.
Feiler. Bruce studied transitions and he says that life has changed a lot in recent years. The days of a predictable linear life are gone. And he says that people on average go through a disruptive life event every 12 to 18 months. And I read that and I paused and I thought, well, that's crazy. And then I'm like, oh, no, wait, it's true. It is true.
It might even be faster now.
Yeah.
I think that research is a few years old. I think we've only accelerated.
Yes. So why so much change? And how can we find mattering on the other side each and every time? Because that seems like a lot.
Well, I think there are a lot of transitions. I think there always have been. But what we no longer have, or so many people no longer have, are the relationships that acted like a shock absorber to help us through those transitions, right? I mean, we are facing real uncertainty in every area of our lives now, geopolitically, economically. We don't know what the jobs are going to look like with AI now coming on the scene. There's a lot of disruption. And what we need is it's relationships, as we talked about earlier, that gives us resilience, that acts as these shock absorbers. I would love to give you this study, which is one of my favorite studies that I've ever read about. It was two people standing at the foot of a hill. Researchers asked them to evaluate the steepness of the hill when they were together and when they were alone. And the steepness, the hill did not look as steep when you were standing next to someone else. So this is that friendships, relationships, people in our lives help us look at the challenges as less steep. When we know we matter to other people in our lives, we don't have that fear that we are going through life alone.
You also remind your readers that transitions are not always losses. If you know what to look for, every transition can be an opportunity, right?
Yeah, for growth, for building back again. There's a woman I interviewed, Julie, who went through a rough transition after being a caretaker of her mother. And instead of pulling inward in her grief, she pushed herself to look outward for a new way to matter. And I found this sort of formula that people who had gone through transitions empty nesting, new jobs, et cetera, relocation, retirement. They looked for genuine needs in the world or in their community or in their neighborhood. And then they used their time, their talent, or their treasure to meet that need. And that is how they made themselves useful again.
You also set some challenges in your book. One of them that I liked is you told people to find yourself a third space. So not mm-hmm. work, not home. What's a third space?
A third space is a place where you go on a regular basis, where you can invest in the people there and where you can feel their investment in your life as well. I tell the story of my dad, who when he retired, went to a weekly restaurant for his beloved burrito, which he treated himself to once a week. Mm-hmm. And he got to know the staff so well that when he stopped going for a few weeks to care for my grandmother as she was dying, he went back and they said, "We really missed you. What happened?" He explained. The next week, they greeted him with a sympathy card that mm-hmm. they had all written out for him, their own personal notes of condolences. So a mattering space is a place where if you don't show up, you'd be missed.
Another challenge that you give to people is you tell people to get to know your 8 immediate neighbors.
Yes.
Why? And is 8 a manageable number?
Yeah. I think 8 is a manageable number. And I'll tell you, I have done it myself here in New York City, where we notoriously don't want to know our neighbors. Mm-hmm. And it has been a lifeline, not just practically when we get a snowstorm and my kids have grown out of their snow pants and I send an emergency SOS text who has size 12 snow pants and they magically arrive at my door. But it's this idea that I know there are people here who are looking out for me and looking out for my kids. And if you've lived in a neighborhood for a while and you don't know your neighbors, bake cookies, go out and get some cookies and put them on a plate, put some saran wrap over them and walk next door and knock on the door and say, I just would love to introduce myself. I know I've lived here for a while, but it feels so funny not to know my neighbors. So here's my number. Here are some cookies. And I don't know. I'm just happy to have you here.
Yeah, we started having more like community events. We actually had the city block off the street so that we could have a block party. We did luminaries at the holidays and had like a hot chocolate bar. And I've lived in my neighborhood for a long time, but now this past year, I know my neighbors. So
isn't it amazing? And
yeah.
It's never too late.
Yeah.
Be the first one. We often hesitate waiting for somebody else to make the first move. And then we never get to connect. So be the person who makes the first move.
I wanted, before we run out of time, the cover of your book has a clementine on it. So I wanted you to tell us why that ended up on the cover.
So I was on a reporting trip in a busy, on my way out of New York City at the Harlem train station. And I ran into a little bodega to get a snack. And I overheard a conversation between the owner and a customer. And the owner said, "When I saw these clementines at the fruit market this morning, I knew I had to bring them in. I remember how much you loved them last time." And I thought that is what mattering is. It is these small clementine moments, as mm-hmm. I've come to think of them in my head, these small moments that say you are worth remembering.
Mm. So the shopkeeper remembered that the person liked them enough to get them and save them for that particular person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You are worth remembering.
Yeah. And so that, I mean, that's the story you used to open up the book, so I'm not giving too much away. But you juxtapose with another story because you also ended up on a train where there was an argument. Tell us about that.
Same day, mm-hmm. I was on my way back from the reporting trip, and a young man in his 20s stormed into the car. His chest was heaving with anger. He was shouting at everybody. People were kind of lowering in their seats to avoid eye contact, when suddenly the conductor walked up to him. He was maybe a foot shorter than this angry man. And he said to him, "Is everything okay? Do you need anything? Do you want to take a seat here? This is a nice seat for you. Do you have your ticket on you? Where are you going?" The conductor treated the man as a human, as a person, and not a problem. And in that one moment, the man's shoulders dropped, his whole demeanor changed. And what I realized as we were pulling out of the station was that this young man was not shouting out in anger. He was reaching out, asking for somebody to say, you know, tell me, do you hear me? Do you see me? Do I even matter? And that conductor answered him with kindness and compassion. And we can all do that. It was masterful to witness, and we are all capable of making that change.
From a tiny clementine to just reminding someone they're human. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time today. We've been talking with author and journalist Jennifer Wallace. Her new book is called Mattering: The Secret to a Life of Deep Connection and Purpose. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Amy.
And thank you for your book. And you've been listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jarovich. Listeners, thanks for joining us.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.